From Texas Public Radio, this is Texas Matters, a weekly radio news magazine that looks at the issues, events, and people in the Lone Star State. Today on Texas Matters, why are Texas highway flyovers so high?
With 16 or 18 feet of clearance for each bridge, you just end up really, really high up.
The footprint of these highways is enormous, and a lot of people are saying no.
This is Texas Matters from Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. This has probably happened to you. Driving in Texas, you come to a spot where two major highways cross, and then you have to navigate the interchange and then over it to the other highway. You drive on the flyover, and you go up, up, and up. For a lot of people, this isn't so easy.
I think they're awful. I get very scared, and I try to avoid them at all costs, especially the one at 1604 and 281. So I've lived in other places, and they have never been that high.
I'm calling in regard to the flyovers in Texas. The timing on this was very funny. I just mentioned to my husband this morning, I need him to take me on a drive around the city so that we can check out the flyover. I am deathly afraid of them. I'm scared of heights. The one that's at 1604 and 281 seems to have a very minimal shoulder, which kind of creates that anxiety of being able to see over the edge. I would love to know why they are so big in Texas and why in San Antonio they seem to be getting bigger. Thank you so much. Bye-bye.
Hi, my name is Jennifer. This is about the Texas flyovers. It's funny that the conversation came up while I'm driving on 35 and seeing the flyovers built high up into the fog. And they are both exhilarating and terrifying, especially once I drive on them. It really is a Texas thing. Some of these structures go taller than the Statue of Liberty. And I do think that if we were to focus more on public transit infrastructure, maybe we wouldn't need so many flyovers, because as we've seen in the Houston area, more highways and more lanes doesn't necessarily mean better traffic.
One caller had a suggestion for dealing with the flyover heebie-jeebies.
And I'm calling about the flyover issue in Texas. And I am actually afraid of heights, but I figured out a great way of dealing with this. When I get onto the up ramp, when I'm going up, I close my eyes. And then when I feel myself coming back down, you know, I can, in my ears, that's when I open my eyes. So I never see myself on the big ramp.
Now, that must be a joke, because it's certainly not a good idea. We do not recommend that. And we should also note that not everyone gets weirded out by going over the flyovers.
I love them. Love them, love them, love them. I haven't gotten to do the highest one yet at 1604 and 10, but I love them.
To find out why these flyovers are so high, I went to that intersection, I-10, 1604, and I met with Brian Purcell, also known as the Texas Highway Man.
Why are you known as a Texas Highway Man?
Because I have a website about local highways, and I just kind of gave myself that moniker once upon a time, and it stuck.
Purcell has a degree in urban planning, and he says he's been interested in transportation infrastructure his entire life. And he's in the right place for that, Texas, where we seem to be in a golden age of building massive highway flyovers that defy imagination as well as gravity. And when Purcell talks about it, he is remarkably understated.
So we're looking at the new Loop 1604 I-10 interchange, stack interchange that they're building here to replace the old Cloverleaf.
There's more than that going on here.
Yeah, this is part of a larger project to expand Loop 1604 to 10 lanes kind of across the north side. But this is sort of the biggest component of that expansion.
This might be why Purcell was not invited to speak at the recent ribbon cutting at the opening of the first of the flyovers at this crossroads.
Good morning, everyone, and thank you for being here with us today for this momentous occasion. My name is Charles Benavides. I'm the TxDOT San Antonio District Engineer, and today we gather to celebrate a major milestone on the Loop 1604 North Expansion Project, the opening of the very first flyover ramp at the Loop 1604 and I-10 interchange. This is a significant step forward in enhancing mobility and safety for San Antonio drivers, and we're thrilled to mark this achievement with all of you.
The grand opening for the flyover did not mention how high it is, But I'm going to tell you, it rises 123 feet off the ground. It is the tallest highway structure in San Antonio, and it is among the tallest in the nation. It's one of eight that are being built at this location, and they did mention how much it's all going to cost.
This flyover ramp is a vital part of the $463 million investment TxDOT is delivering in Segment 2 of the expansion project. The innovative interchange we are building behind us will enhance connectivity at one of the most congested interchanges in the state, and lay the foundation for future improvements that will reduce congestion, increase safety, and improve travel times by up to 76%.
This interchange is the second of six segments in the Texas Department of Transportation's $1.2 billion project that will expand a 23-mile stretch of San Antonio's Loop 1604 between Bandera Road and I-35 from 4 to 10 lanes. For years, this project has been bogged down in funding and environmental problems, but it's expected now to be completed in 2028.
And while we are opening the first flyover today, there's more to look forward to. The second flyover ramp is scheduled to open next spring, with an additional ramp opening to traffic later in 2025. So with today's ribbon cutting, we're not just opening a new flyover, we're opening the door to smoother commutes, safer journeys, and a stronger transportation network for San Antonio.
And then fuel even more explosive growth and development in one of the already fastest growing areas of Texas. Next to the podium at the ribbon cutting, there were signs that said Clear Lanes Texas, which is Governor Greg Abbott's branded program that is basically his war on traffic congestion.
My only ask of our senior staff at TxDOT is to execute.
That's Bruce Bug, chairman of the Texas Transportation Commission.
But you have to have a map to know where you need to execute. And it's been my honor to have been asked to come up with a plan for what is now known as Texas Clear Lanes. But it was designed for the most congested choke points throughout the state of Texas. And as you might guess, those most congested choke points are all centered in the five major metropolitan areas of Texas.
If we know anything about Texans, is that they hate traffic congestion, and that's evident in this 1955 film about the problem of traffic jams in Dallas.
This is Dallas, a towering tribute to man's ability to raise beam on beam and stone on stone. From this distance, you don't see the 750,000 people who call this city their home. You don't see the 3,000 new residents moving into the area every month. But move in a little closer and you will. You will see a city reaching for 1 million population, a city with a complex network of lifelines, a city with a staggering traffic load.
Dynamic growth brings people and growing payrolls. As business grows, population grows. And the snowball keeps rolling until there appears to be no limit to the area's potential.
But there is a limit, and it's already pinching. The problem of traffic, a problem of Dallas progress.
The movement of traffic to and from the heart of Dallas becomes a more pressing problem day by day. More people need to get more places in a shorter span of time.
Traffic jams cost time and money. They blight a city, driving business elsewhere.
Even back in the 1940s, Texans were dealing with the growing pains that comes with supercharged development. Little did they know back then that the state would thrive in the coming decades, and traffic would only get worse.
Because of its tremendous growth in the past 10 years, Dallas has an even greater and more pressing traffic problem than most cities of its size. Consider these changes in the past decade. In December of 1945, the county had 171,000 workers going to and from their jobs every day. The load was heavy in that day and age for the roads and highways we had then. Today, with more than 322,000 workers on the go in Dallas County, traffic jams are bigger, the delays longer.
Dallas went from being super congested in the 1950s to seeing the completion of the I-5 interchange in 2005, which is probably the best-known five-stack flyover complex in the nation. The I-5 interchange was constructed to address severe traffic congestion at the intersection of U.S. Highway 75, the Central Expressway, and Interstate 365, the LBJ Freeway. In the 1990s, this junction was a major bottleneck in the rapidly growing Dallas metro area. Over 500,000 vehicles slowly passed through daily. The original Cloverleaf interchange, built in the 1960s, just couldn't keep up. The project was named the I-5 due to the five levels of roadways. The design included 43 bridges, a total of 37 miles of roadway, and a height reaching 120 feet at its tallest point. That's about the equivalent of a 12-story building. The cost was approximately $261 million. That was real money back then, and it was one of the most significant infrastructure projects in Texas during that period. The Dallas I-5 worked like a charm, and it set the model for how Texas will be dealing with cloverleaf interchanges that are overwhelmed by too much traffic. You just build a flyover.
Yeah, they fly over everything.
We're back with Brian Purcell, also known as the Texas Highway Man. He says in the half century since the Dallas I-5 was built, Texas has gotten a lot better at building these massive things.
So this is what's called a stack interchange, and it's replacing an old cloverleaf interchange, which is completely inefficient for the high volumes that it carries today. And so this type of interchange has been around for 50 years. It's just that the newer versions of it are going higher and higher. And a lot of that's because of the way they construct them now. In the old days, they had shorter spans, so the girders underneath the roadways were shorter, maybe 4 feet at most. The newer ones, as you can see, have much longer spans, and so those girders, like those big steel girders over there, are about 9 feet high. So right there, you're adding, 5 feet per level of extra height. On top of that, they make them higher because they get better elevation to let the traffic go faster, so they're able to bank the curves a little bit more. In Texas, one of the biggest reasons why they go higher is because you have to add another level for the access roads, the frontage roads. So when the access roads go through the interchange, they meet at the same level, and that adds a fifth level. And so that can add another 25 feet or so to the top of the interchange.
So another reason that the Texas flyovers are so high, then, is because of the frontage roads. Well, what does that mean? Let's dig a little deeper. Great, are you there?
Okay?
Hello?
Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you now. Okay, great. Fantastic. Thank you for talking to me today. I appreciate it. I reached out to another expert. If you could just introduce yourself.
Yeah, I am Grady Hillhouse. I'm a registered professional civil engineer in Texas. I run a YouTube channel called Practical Engineering that is kind of intended to demystify the constructed environment.
First off, does Hillhouse agree that Texas has a thing for really high flyovers?
I think so. I mean, there's not a clearinghouse of information about interchanges, and so it's kind of hard to piece that together. But at least from the research I've done, and just from having lived in Texas my whole life, it really does seem like, compared to other states in the U.S. especially, that we have a lot of the highest interchanges in the country.
And does Texas really need to build those flyovers so high, or is this just a Texas flex?
It's really a combination of several things. One of them, the biggest one, I think, is just the access roads or the feeder or frontage roads. For a lot of historical reasons and kind of organizational inertia, Texas has more frontage roads than any place in the nation. And what that does for interchanges is it just forces you to have more levels because you have more roads. And so you just end up, instead of four level interchanges, you have five or six level ones. And with 16 or 18 feet of clearance for each bridge, you just end up really, really high up.
So when I hear that statistics, Texas has more frontage roads than other states, any other state, I remember, well, Texas is huge. We have probably more highway than any other state, I imagine. I mean, is that the reason why? Or if all states were equal, Texas would come out with the most frontage roads?
I don't think that's it. A lot of places, they don't put access or frontage roads along their highways. It's not uniquely Texan, but it is in the volume of the frontage roads is uniquely Texan. And, for better or worse, I think as motorists, we enjoy them, but there are disadvantages too. But it's just kind of a policy that Texas ran with, and almost all of our highways have access roads that run alongside the highways. And so you just end up with a lot of extra roadway.
So what are the disadvantages to having so much frontage road?
Part of it is, you know, it's just more roadway to maintain. You know, roads cost money. They cost money to build and they cost money to keep up with. And so you just end up with a lot more asphalt to run these parallel roadways along the highways. But there are, I think, disadvantages too with how they manage traffic and also how land use works, because, you know, with those frontage roads, you end up with development right alongside all the highways because, you know, you have access that way. And so it has an effect on how our cities build, how they grow, and how they look.
When you drive in other states and they don't have the frontage roads, and then you have basically like a forest, like right on the edge of the highway, I'm kind of creeped out a little bit by that. I'm used to the elbow room.
Yeah, some people hate it and some people like it. It's just, it's just a different way of doing things.
What are the engineering reasons for the height of these Texas highway flyovers?
Yes. So the Federal Highway Administration has clearance requirements for bridges on highways. I believe that's 16 feet. And that's just, you know, it's just a function of the height of trucks that we want to let on our highways, basically. You know, you have to draw a line somewhere, and that's where they drew it. Texas Department of Transportation usually bumps that up to 16 and a half feet, I think, just to, you know, provide a little extra margin of safety. And then we also in Texas have the, I believe it's called the Texas Highway Freight Network. And so that's roads designated specifically for hauling freight. Those bridges are usually set 18 and a half feet. And so for an interchange, you know, if you can imagine, if the two crossing highways are both designated as part of this freight network, every level of the bridge has to be 18 and a half feet plus the thickness of the deck. And so, you know, if you're talking about a 4-level, 5-level, 6-level interchange, that just gets really, really high up there by the time you get to the top.
Have we reached the limit of how high we can go? Or could these things, I mean, Texas has the 5-stack. Could we see 6-7 stacks?
Yes. I don't think there's any really engineering limit in terms of like structural, our ability to design these types of structures. But when you get into economic feasibility, I think maybe we're at the limit. You know, I don't think there's any need for levels above that, but I don't think it's outside the realm of possibility or feasibility.
You're listening to Texas Matters from Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies, and we're asking the question, why are Texas highway flyovers so high? Let's touch base with why this question is so important to so many drivers.
I think they're awful. I get very scared, and I try to avoid them at all costs.
They are freaked out by driving into the stratosphere. So how safe are these things?
My wife and my wife's parents are among those that kind of get white-knuckled when they go up on those.
Texas highwayman Brian Purcell.
And I get it. Even just the other day when there was fog out here, you couldn't even see the top levels. Like, I can only imagine what it was like driving up there. You're like driving in the clouds. I guess the way to get around it is either don't go up there, you know, you can still stay on the lower level and use the access roads, or just stay focused on the road and don't look either way and just kind of stay focused right in front of you and you'll get through it. It's all right.
So is there a public safety issue? I mean, could people drive off these things?
Those rails are built pretty strong, and they're supposed to be able to deflect even an 18-wheeler, a fully loaded 18-wheeler truck and keep it from going over the side. So it's very unlikely. I mean, obviously, you know, you could have a specific sequence of events that could launch a vehicle over the side, but I've never heard of it happening, so I think it's extremely unlikely.
I want to reassure people that they are safe.
Yes.
Texas is building these things strong.
Yes, like I said, those rails are built to deflect even the heaviest trucks that would be up there. And again, if you were to hit it, you'd be hitting it on the side, and so it would deflect you rather than hitting it kind of at an angle where you would have the possibility maybe of going through it, but very, very unlikely. They're designed to keep traffic and vehicles on the overpass.
Okay, let's get a second opinion. How safe are these Texas flyovers from Grady Hillhouse? Well, there's also the human element. I've been talking to listeners, and some of them really have trouble driving on these things. It really gives them the heebie-jeebies.
Yeah, I think that's an interesting aspect, too. I mean, and that's something engineers face, not just with bridges, but, you know, lots of other tall structures, tall buildings. There are design limits to movement. And a lot of times, you know, those human factors are the governing factors that drive the design. It's not about strength or you know, safety. It's just about how comfortable do we feel.
Being afraid of heights is not that unusual. And then you're asking someone to drive their vehicle over this extremely high flyover overpass. People kind of got, you know, it's like, I'd rather not, but do they have a choice?
Luckily, our roadway network is designed in a way that there are lots of alternate routes to get to where you're going. Maybe not all of them are the fastest, but, you know, I think people do have a choice when it comes to driving over tall interchanges or not. But it is interesting. I don't, as far as I'm aware, there are no aspects of the bridge design codes or you know, the state DOT rules that take those things into account on interchanges. And, you know, maybe that's something that's worth looking into.
How safe are they to drive over?
Oh, I mean, I don't think anyone has anything to worry about in terms of like structural strength.
We're like, you know, like driving over the edge.
Oh, I see. Yeah. So, you know, these bridges are designed with barriers on the edges, that are meant to keep anyone from going over the edge. And in a lot of cases, they're designed in such a way that, you know, if you were to hit that barrier, they're intended to redirect your vehicle. And so to send you basically in the opposite direction. So yeah, there's a ton of testing and thought put into roadway barriers, not just for bridges, but, you know, any highway barrier. There's a big testing lab at Texas A&M University where, you know, they crash cars nonstop every day practically to test these things out and make sure they work well.
So when you do dry over these things, if you're not having the butterflies in the stomach moment, I mean, you do get a spectacular view sometimes. I mean, you are really high off the ground and you can see quite a bit.
Yeah, I think especially in Texas where, you know, a lot of our cities are fairly flat. Some of these interchanges are the tallest thing in the city. And so, yeah, it's some, you know, when I'm at somewhere new, I try to plan my route so I can hit those highest ramps and really get a nice view of the city.
But the problem is it can be very distracting and you're supposed to be. So I just look at, you know, directly in front of me and try not to get too distracted.
Yeah, I think that's probably the best strategy.
Well, speaking of taking in the big view, what really is the big picture when it comes to these massive flyover interchanges?
I think these massive flyovers are a testament to what we prioritize in the state, which is highways and moving cars over any other form of transportation. I'm Megan Kimball, and I'm the author of City Limits, Infrastructure Inequality and the Future of America's Highways.
Kimball's book explains how the ever-expanding urban highways accelerate inequality and they fracture communities. She describes the growing movements in opposition to highway expansion in three Texas cities and calls for a more sustainable path forward.
I mean, Texas spends more money per capita than any other state on highways. We have more lane miles than any other state. So a lot of state revenue goes to building and maintaining roads. You know, we have a very vast state, so we do need roads to connect us. But, you know, in cities like Austin and Houston, these interchanges, they're so big in part because we have so many roads and so many lanes on those roads that need to be connected. And so that just demonstrates that, you know, we have prioritized through our transportation policy moving cars rather than building other forms of transportation like transit or walk and bike transportation to move people by other modes.
So if the reason we apparently need these massive flyovers is because they solve a problem for us, which is too many cars all trying to use the highway at the same time, well, maybe we need to look upstream at this problem and how we got here.
More and more and more cars. more on our roads than last year. And there'll be more next year.
The 1957 public service film produced by the American Road Builders Association told America that we needed highways.
Today, many of our highways are already obsolete. What would happen on them during a national emergency? The entire population under panic conditions trying to escape. Death on the highways is one of America's greatest problems.
Kimball says currently Texas remains stuck in the 1950s mentality that building more highways is the only solution.
Yeah, when I was reporting my book, I went to go see the High Five Interchange in Dallas, which is the first five-level stack interchange that was built in the country, I think. And there's actually like a walking and bike trail that goes under it. And so I tried to get on that bike trail, you know, as a pedestrian to go down and see this thing outside of my car. And it's so, that's what, like what I meant when I say it's so out of proportion to any kind of human scale. You know, I did finally find it. I was the only person down there. It felt so inhospitable outside of my car. You know, cars are just roaring overhead. And it really shows that we have prioritized moving cars. Our state Department of Transportation is answering to political leaders who say that to build economic prosperity in this state, we need to facilitate car travel. And lots of other places show that there are other ways to do that, that you can actually have a lot of prosperity by getting people on buses and trains, but we have chosen not to do that.
And you write about that there's a freeway revolt.
Yeah, so the Texas Department of Transportation has allocated about $60 billion over the coming decade to expand highways in five Texas cities. And the people in those cities, many just normal residents, have started resisting those expansions. So Houston is a great example. The I-45 expansion is a now $11 billion project that will displace more than 1,200 people from their homes. And a lot of the people in those homes and in neighborhoods adjacent to that highway expansion have started organizing to resist that expansion. So volunteers went door to door, which I chronicle in my book, trying to kind of organize their resistance to this massive state agency. And, you know, they filed civil rights complaints alleging that this project violated the Civil Rights Act by disproportionately impacting Black and Hispanic neighborhoods and families. That in Austin, people have sued TxDOT, a group of activists called Rethink 35, saying that they are violating, you know, national environmental law through the expansion of I-35, which goes right through the heart of the city. So people across the state are really trying to revolt and say, we don't want these expansions. We do not want more cars in our neighborhoods. We don't want more air pollution. We don't want more greenhouse gas pollution. Transportation is the leading contributor to greenhouse gas emissions nationally and in Texas. The footprint of these highways is enormous, and a lot of people are saying no.
From even an anthropological point of view, these flyover interchanges are absolutely monumental in scale, and they could be seen as monuments like the ancient pyramids built by the Egyptians, the Aztecs, and the Mayans. Could these be seen as pyramids built by the Texans? But monuments to what? The state's ego? The car society? Consumer culture? Certainly, there is more going on here than just helping us get from point A to point B.
No doubt about that, yeah. And indeed, I can see where bigger is better, taller is better, that kind of flex. But this isn't only a Texas thing anymore. Like I mentioned, other states are doing this now. California, Florida, even places like Wisconsin and Tennessee now have interchanges that go up over 100 feet tall. We do more of them here because of the frontage roads, and also because I think Texas, probably more so than other states, has built a lot of new freeways and expanded freeways. And certainly, yeah, Texas is known for being bigger. Everything's bigger in Texas, right?
That's it for this edition of Texas Matters. Thanks for listening. I'm David Martin Davies. You can email us at texasmatters@tpr.org. There are past episodes of Texas Matters on our website at tpr.org. And you can find us wherever you download cool podcasts. And tune in again next week for another edition of Texas Matters from Texas Public Radio.